Hey, this is Of Earth, a culinary plant medicine podcast, and I'm your host, Chris Sage from The Herbal Chef.
Today, everybody, thanks for joining us. We have Simon Davies, who is the ex-executive chef of Alinea, 3 Michelin in Chicago, Illinois. I'm super honored to have him here. Simon, thank you so much for joining us. Wow, guys, calm down. Jesus, we're so loud sometimes. We just have him here just for that one moment. Simon, why don't you introduce yourselves to those that don't know you?
Awesome, thank you, Chris. Super honored to be here talking to you, very excited. Quite the introduction. So I guess for those that don't know me, I have been at Alinea restaurant for the last 10 and a half years, up to executive chef, but left at the beginning of this year to basically start to pursue my own creative goals and go in a direction that was more conducive to who I am as a human being, as opposed to working for others' ideals.
So, what have you kind of been getting into right now? Like what's on the horizon for you since you've left, Alinea?
I guess the biggest news in my life is I got engaged, to my wonderful fiance, Shelby.
Congratulations.
And thank you very much. And started a company called Elixir Creative. And that was basically just a starting point for me to conduct business in whatever form I wanted. There's a lot going on right now, obviously, in the world, and a lot of major life change for me, leaving a major restaurant like Alinea. And to be honest, I'm not entirely sure what I want to be doing yet.
Right.
So Elixir Creative allows me the freedom to create whatever I want in the next year or two. We had planned on kind of just taking a little break and doing some traveling and some consulting here and there, perhaps. And I have done a little bit of that and working on some media projects independently. Because a huge passion of mine has always been artistic, or coming from an artistic background, has been photography and film as well,
right.
And music. So what Elixir Creative allows me to do is harness that energy in whichever way it manifests, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it,
right.
And gives me the freedom to create what I want. And obviously, you know, with the state of the world, perhaps not the most productive time to be doing that. But at the same time, I'm very grateful to have gotten out of that world when I did.
Yeah, I mean, that must be it's a sticker shock. Anytime you're coming out of that Michelin system where it's just so tight, everything is in order, in its place all the time, and you know, zero room for error, to then coming into like the real world where people don't normally operate like that. It's almost like, you know, you get shocked and you just need some time for normalcy, an adjustment.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, backing up a little bit, you know, now that you're starting to resettle and recenter and figure out what it is that you want to do moving forward, what was Alinea like? Like, what was a day-to-day in Alinea like working for Grant Achatz?
You know, above anything else, the amount of energy that people expanded there and dedication to, you know, the creativity and the teamwork and the coming together towards a common goal is truly extraordinary.
Yeah.
And I'm incredibly grateful for everybody that came through those doors and dedicated everything they did to make that happen, and, you know, created some amazing relationships and friendships, and, you know, like working side by side with Mike Bigale for so long, and having that creative dynamic between us in that conversation, you know, creativity and art and, you know, expression through different outlets and mediums has always been a huge aspect of my life. And I think one of the greatest things that Alinea has to offer is the ability to do that and express yourself uniquely through food and in an environment that is really conducive to that. And then, you know, I think I just reached a point after being there for so long where I just got mentally tired of the fine dining world in general. Like, there's so much ego in it and competition. And I think, you know, a lot of the people and chefs that I, older generations that I looked up to, it's like almost like I grew up and then, you know, met them and experienced conversations with them, and they didn't meet up to the expectations of these amazing heroes that I thought they were.
The godlike and painting.
To be frank, a lot of them were a huge disappointment in the way that they carried themselves. And there's also a lot of great people. And so it's a tough balance. And I think I just got tired of that like ego-centered mentality of it. And, wanted to do something that is more of a contribution to the world, and whether that's through food or whatever, I want to be part of moving that industry forward in a way that makes a positive impact for the people working in that, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I experienced much of the same thing, and the more people that you meet, the more you realize that a lot of it is inflated ego. What was sort of your takeaway from that? Do you feel that chefs can be relaxed in that environment and still, you know, cook Michelin level food? Or do you feel that it was just, it's part of the territory of cooking that level? Or do you feel that it was, you know, it could be changed and still, you know, have that level of expertise and that level of execution?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like anything else in this world or any other industry. I think it really just depends on the individual. You know, a lot of people are capable of, you know, balancing themselves and keeping their cool, or, you know, whatever, for lack of a better term. And then there's people that can't see past themselves or can't see through themselves and, you know, completely engulf themselves in ego.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I think there's a lot of it. And I think that as a young cook, like, for example, I started at Alinea when I was 19, and it was super exciting to me.
Yeah.
But I think, and that world of ego was super exciting to me, you know, to say like, oh, I'm at one of the best restaurants in the world. Nobody does what I do. But the fact is, like, restaurants all over the world are doing that. But inside that of environment, it's like a melting pot of like, you're the best, and this is the best, and this is the way to do it. And that's the only way. And in a lot of cases, you know, that may be true. But I think as you grow up and as you mature, that becomes less and less important. And the whole reason I got into food in the first place, I mean, I was working at a diner to get some extra cash, you know, so I could take the mushrooms and go on hikes. I started cooking for my friends at parties. Like at 1 a.m, we'd all be out of our minds and we'd get hungry. And for me, what I really noticed was I'd raid whoever's house we were at, the pantry, and I put together whatever, you know, just winging it. And I had so much fun doing that.
Right.
And the whole party would just stop, like, once the food was put out. and everything would just get quiet for like, not long, just like 10, 15 minutes. People would eat and then it would start roaring again. And I think that's when I like, you know, you try to pinpoint like when you fall in love with something. I think those moments were when I really fell in love with cooking, because it opened my eyes to what a sense of community it brings and how it's so fundamental to who we are as human beings. And that's something that, especially in recent years, I've been trying to really explore through traveling and meeting other chefs and learning about their cultures of food. And I think something that's so unique and special in this industry or in the world of food is our ability to connect on such a fundamental level with people that we've never met before. Like some of my best friends now are chefs that I haven't spent more time in person physically than a couple of days with, but we've just continued that conversation, you know.
Absolutely.
Because I think, you know, obviously travel is special as it is, but when you meet someone when you're traveling and you get to experience a meal with them or a unique experience with them, there's such a deep connection that happens through that, through experiencing someone else's culture and sharing it with that. And then you return the favor when they come to visit you. And I think the connection that you build with people becomes so deep because you already know, like through food, you already know a lot about that person. You already have an immense amount in common.
God, I have this massive smile on my face because I'm just thinking about all the people that I've met across the world that have, you know, this incredible love for food and more so culture in general. And every single one of them just wants to feed, you know, just wants to feed you, like just wants to show you about their land, like what they've learned, what they've done. And it's the most beautiful connection as you're describing. And it really is. Yeah. And you see so many different layers of a person when they're in their element, I think, when they're in their artistry.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's really beautiful. Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's in, you know, talking about the first time that you fall in love with something, you know, I still remember the first time that I realized that I had to cook for a living. Like I had to do preventative medicine over going to medical school. And to me, preventative medicine is food. And I remembered thinking to myself, I was in my college house at that time with my friends. And I was like looking around and I said to myself, like, I cannot keep eating this shitty ass cafeteria food. Like if I don't have minsef or malfouf or waragdwali or, you know, all these classic Middle Eastern dishes that my grandmother would make growing up, I don't know if I can live a happy life. Like I remember that thought so clearly. I don't know if I can be happy without it. And that was my like complete drive into actually cooking, into like learning how to cook, because I realized that I don't think I'd be happy in my life if I didn't have, you know, some of the greatest dishes in my opinion around to cook for my kids, cook for myself, my wife, et cetera.
Yeah. And it's fascinating to me like that for you. And I think with other people, and at least in my experience, it's still a culmination of your past experiences. So like, you know, you were studying in the medical profession, right? So you just made food about that.
Right.
Because it connected.
Exactly. And, you know, everyone has their own way of connecting to food. Literally all around the world, that is what people do. And it blows my mind sometimes because people don't understand the true importance of food, not just as a consumable, but literally as it moves the entire world, like the entire world from agriculture to transportation. This is something that is quite literally an essence of life.
Yeah, no, I think it's incredibly important what you're doing. And you know, I think food as medicine and medicine through food obviously is fundamental to the history of our human beings and civilization.
Absolutely. Dating back tens of thousands of years since, I mean, and you know, what I really wanted to do was focus on one plant at a time so that I could really tell those stories. And so we really focused on cannabis because that was what my background was in, is studying that. And, you know, starting to look at it, you know, you see papers from that are citing the great Chinese medicine book of 2737 BC, ancient China. And you see where and how cannabis, you know, went along the trade routes and went everywhere up until modern day North America, tens of thousands of years later. And you have to wonder, like, you know, these people have had this plant in their lives for so many years, and yet we're here, you know, criminally charging people and, you know, obviously unproportionately charging minorities in for what has been part of our history since we had written history. So for when I started to realize that, I automatically felt a sense of duty to let people in on what I thought was, you know, a crazy, crazy conspiracy that we were keeping cannabis illegal. Yeah. And that's what kind of shaped what then became The Herbal Chef. You know, and it's funny too, because the name The Herbal Chef, the acronym being THC, is a play obviously on cannabis, but it also is a play on herbs, because the first book that was ever written was by a Chinese medicine man. And he basically in 2737 BC published a, you know, book that had, it was called The Great Herbal, and it had all of their medicinal uses for shrubs, you know, spices and whatnot. And then I think it was like 100 years later, a second rendition of it came out called The Herbal. And then now in 2015, we have The Herbal Chef. And like, that was my whole thought process, was bringing these things to light once again. And, you know, you mentioned Mike Begale, and he, I don't know if I said that right, his last name.
Begale.
You know, he's doing that as well. And I think that there is a strong connection towards looking into, really diving into the depths that food is medicine. And I just think it's a fascinating topic to really discover, and why, you know, now this podcast exists, of Earth.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, it's incredibly important.
Yeah. And I think it has a lot of ties into, you know, everything, into big business, into small business, into everything, how people function.
And people have lost a major connection to food, you know, in our modern lifestyles and the busy, the ways that we carry out and the ways that we eat now. So I think with chefs like yourself and, you know, I think all around, gaining a lot of traction and focusing on the medicinal quality and the breakdowns of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Will hopefully wake a lot of people up to that.
Absolutely. And I'm, you know, one of the best things, experiences that I've ever had is actually like working with traditional medicine people and indigenous peoples that have an insane, well, it makes me feel like I know absolutely nothing. It makes me feel like I just like scratched the surface of like one small topic, when we'll be walking through, you know, the forest with these ethnobotanists and these tribesmen and women, and, you know, the Maori in New Zealand, or the Shibibo in Peru, or the, you know, tribes up in Northern Canada. And sometimes we'll be walking through, and they'll be like riddling off each plant as we're walking to it and how to use it for its medicinal purpose. And it's moments like those that I realize that I know absolutely nothing. And I've been studying this for years.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of knowledge is just insane.
Vast.
I have several books, you know, on all the different herbs and plants and native plants. And it's just, it's insane trying to read through it all and learn it. And the the people that have that all just known. It's just fascinating.
It literally it's incredible. It really is. It's absolutely astonishing to hear these people talk about it. Cause you just sit back and realize there's just so much more to learn, which is humbling. And it also gives you like a place. Okay. Well, I could do this for a very long time and doesn't seem like I'm going to get bored, because there's just an ever amounting, mass of knowledge.
Yeah. For everything.
For everything, literally. I see that you are pretty active on Instagram in sharing things that you truly care about. And I wanted to ask your opinion on how you feel the response from our government in the U.S. has been towards the restaurant industry. What are some good things that you've seen, if any, and what are some major concerns that you've been seeing?
Yeah, I mean, it's been incredibly disappointing to watch our government's response. in regards to anything right now. I think it's been hugely revealing to how unsustainable our industry as we know it is.
Yep.
People just have to understand, we have to rebuild it. The way that it is set up now, in any restaurant, the way that the workforce is set up and the economics of it, and, the fact that you have restaurant owners that have money, basically buying talent and taking advantage of it. It's just the whole thing needs to be revamped. And Shelby and I have actually been talking a lot about that lately, because she's in finance. Mm-hmm. So we're thinking of creative ways to support people and offer assistance from both the perspective of myself, who's a chef in a restaurant, but also Shelby's vast experience in the finance world. Which most, talented chefs, frankly, just know nothing about.
Right.
So you see it over and over again, getting taken advantage of, and just making bad deals.
Absolutely.
So we want to figure out a way to at least make some kind of difference in that regard. But it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable for, the workers that are making minimum wage, living paycheck to paycheck, working nonstop. The system doesn't make sense. I think people need to pay more for food, and the whole thing needs to be revamped.
Interesting. So you think that there's a call to pay for more for the actual dishes that you're eating, rather than to reform the actual hourly tip, etc. system that's already in place in most restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, I think people need to understand. Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. It's hard for a restaurant to make a profit. So I understand the business side of it. Trust me, I'm not saying that that doesn't make sense. I understand, the need to make a profit from a business sense. But I think people also need to understand that when they go out to eat, there are people working really hard to make that food into what it is they're enjoying. And I think they need to understand that they might need to pay a little more for it. Also, just to bring better quality ingredients to the table. Especially, talking about food as medicine, there's this whole, and there has been for a long time, to just make food more efficient and cheaper and faster and et cetera. And that just kills the quality. And so if people want quality and people want to have good experiences and want to support their fellow humans, I think, that's just the way it needs to be.
Yeah. I mean, and that's going back to really understanding, agriculture at its core, and what the government's subsidizing versus what they're not subsidizing. They're not subsidizing organic anything. And that's part of the issue, I think, because I think there's, the bigger you go on scale of quality, the harder it is to maintain. So some smaller farms doing good work could supply the majority of the U.S. without an issue, rather than these ginormous agricultural centers that are, you know, flying planes over their crops, releasing Monsanto onto them to keep the, viruses, bugs, et cetera, away from the crops, and in turn poisoning all of humanity. So there's ways to go smaller on those farms, have some more workers involved in it, or have some, you know, different methods involved in it that aren't literally causing cancer to people. And then dropping the prices for organic, really high quality produce. But the problem has started back in the agricultural revolution, where everything was bred strictly for size, density, and yield. Everything. Because in a scarcity mindset, yeah, they're looking for the most yield. They don't care if the carrot tastes good or it has more nutrients, but they do care about it, you know, having 20 of them versus 10 of them. And so that's what was bred out of it. And I think now, you know, we're starting to see a resurgence of people that actually care about what's going into their body. And I don't say now like 2020, I mean, in the past decade or so, we've really seen an uptick in people caring about what they put into their bodies, reading the labels that have things, being able to pronounce the names that are in their groceries, and things of that nature. And I think that, you know, what they're doing, like, you know, I had Jamie Simpson on the podcast as well, and he at the Chef's Garden, their only mission is to breed for nutrient density and flavor. And it is insane what they're coming up with. Like broccoli, that's 300 times the nutrient density of regular broccoli that you're finding on the store shelves. I mean, imagine a world where kids can not only eat vegetables that are hyper nutrient dense and bioavailable, but, you know, think about what that does in terms of hunger. Think about what that does in terms of, you know, all sorts of different issues, mental and physical issues that are happening to our young kids and then as they grow up to be adults now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, you know, to you and me, that's, and a lot of other people, that's a no-brainer.
Totally.
But I think people are so detached from what that takes and from where their food is coming from that it's not even a thought. But you know, it's crazy.
It's sad, dude. It's so sad.
Yeah.
Like, but that's what I mean by food is in everything. It like literally is the baseline for all existence in a lot of ways. And it's the baseline for illness or health in a lot of ways, in probably most of the ways. I mean, you know, that's not to say that environmental factors don't have a place, but what I'm saying is it's encompassing of everything. Like when you really truly understand food, you understand that it affects all walks of life, all industries of life as well.
Yeah. Full cycle.
Absolutely. So I, you know, speaking of, Jamie, it got me thinking too, you know, what equipment do you miss from Alinea? Like what was some of the equipment that you had there that was just so fucking obnoxious and ridiculous, but it was amazing to be able to work with? And I only say obnoxious because it's like, you know, some of the pieces of equipment are 70, 80 grand, that you would buy for like a laboratory. You know,
you're going to hate this answer, but maybe it's because this is my honest answer. Maybe it's because I was there for so long. I don't miss anything about it. I worked there because it was an amazing opportunity to be creative and to work in a very regimented, very learn very fast. And you know, work with some extraordinarily talented people. But in terms of equipment, like I don't miss cooking like that. Like that's never
how I see what you're saying.
That's never the type of, if this is going to be weird, but that's never the type of food that I've really enjoyed cooking.
Right.
Like the type of food that I really enjoy cooking is the type of food that we eat for dinner or when we get together with our friends and, you know, we cook a big spread of, this or that, or we, you know, explore some cuisine around the world. Like, that is what I enjoy the most.
I dig that.
So it's not about being tainted. It's just more so about, like, I don't want a rotary evaporator in my house right now, you know?
That's fair. So, that's fair.
If that makes any sense.
No, but yeah, it totally,
you know, like,
does.
It's fun to play with those toys, and it's fun to have, you know, make distillations using a rotary evaporator. So if I had to answer that, I would pick that, I guess.
I see what you're saying.
Plus there's a whole lot of other things you can do with it.
Right.
But the type of food that brings me the most joy is the type of food that we can just throw out on family style plates and, you know, get around and just have a good time, you know?
Right. I've always enjoyed, like, the food, because in my mind, you know, going from the Michelin system, going to, like, you know, starting this business, is that I never, ever would have a beverage other than, like, water. I would never, like, I couldn't remember when I was smiling, cooking, or anything like that. And I realized that when I took out all that pressure and I allowed myself to just cook and, you know, even have a beverage, God forbid, an alcoholic beverage while I was cooking, all of a sudden my mood changed, in, like, it was like, you know, total shift. And I realized that I was having so much more fun cooking when I was able to, you know, cook those bigger spreads, cook like my grandmother, cook like, you know, like I was cooking for friends coming over. So
yeah. And that's what it's about. Every person that cooks, that's why they got into it. Right.
Totally.
And I think somewhere along the lines that for, you know, it gets lost for a little while and, or forever or not at all. And, you know, everybody has their own experience, but, yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, that's what makes it very enjoyable. And
I agree. I definitely agree. You know, in my mind, I love sometimes, like, the luxury of the sous vide or the, or a good oven. Like, for instance, why I like, you know, working with certain types of ovens, like Rationale, for instance, or Unox, or like one of the ones that where you can literally create something and then you can just put it in there and forget about it.
Oh, and yeah, absolutely.
Like, those type of things make it more like where I can still have technique involved, but it also opens up the door for me hanging out with my friends and family rather than, like, being super, you know, concerned about time and temperature, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I have an immersion circulator, and I'll, you know, there will be days where I, you know, can the bath, and there will be days where I cook it from raw in a cast iron. And it's just, you know,
right.
It's important to have all the tools available to you.
You know, there's no other feeling like when you cook over open fire too.
Oh yeah.
It's primal and amazing.
Absolutely.
And you have to build the fire, you have to tend it. And, like, those type of things too are just fucking phenomenal.
I mean, when we were camping this last month, like, that would be it. That would be the process. You know, you spend an hour getting the fire lit and to the right temperature, and or sometimes just down to coals, and, you know, made all sorts of things. It was great.
So I'm curious then, you know, where do you feel that the industry is heading then? Like, where, how do you see the industry in, like, you know, 2021, and then where do you see it in 5-10 years from now?
Oh man, that's,
it's tough, huh?
I feel like it's almost impossible to say right now. There's so much unknown. I think there's a lot of emphasis from a lot of people, that are kind of talking like we are and putting more of an emphasis on, you know, culture and community and, you know, making it better for the people that work in it, focusing more on, like I said, the community aspect of it versus, like, award ceremonies and who's the best and things like that.
Totally. You know, your approach to answering this question is more philosophical, like what people are going to be feeling in the industry and as they're moving forward. And I think that's a really good approach towards what, you know, how to answer this question, because you're absolutely right in saying that there's, I mean, nobody has any clue what the next year is going to look like.
We don't. And it's hard not to be cynical right now. And I am always very optimistic that, that we come out, that people come out a lot stronger because of everything that's happening. And it's a huge wake up call to you know, becoming closer knit community. And I think that before this year and everything that's happened, that was, it was, or it felt to me, and maybe it's just in, you know, the people that I'm talking with and the friends that I have and chefs around the world that I know, but it felt like it's already heading that direction.
In what direction?
In the direction of, you know, just becoming a closer community and, you know, helping each other more, and as opposed to trying to one up each other. Exactly. And all we can hope for is that through this major suffering that everybody's experiencing, that we come through with a new awareness and a new thought on the other side of it, and something that is built up better than it was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And well said. And I think, you know, as you're saying that, and I'm thinking about the conversations that I've had, it does seem more and more that people are open to collaboration and just lifting one another up. And I think that's an incredibly beautiful outcome of a really shitty situation. And one of the, you know, incredible outcomes, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, what does that mean then in terms of, you're saying that it's hard to not be cynical. And by nature, I am, you know, an optimist. It's hard to find me without a positive attitude on any given situation. But lately, I haven't felt that.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel that. I don't feel that for what's happening right now. I don't think that, like, there's anything actually rational that's happening.
Yeah.
Right now. And it's hard for anybody to wrap their head around, let alone, like, how to build a business or how to, like, you know, do anything normal, you know, quote unquote normal, in society. It's really kind of fallen by the wayside. You can't do what you could even a year ago, or even, you know, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. Things just are not the same. And there's a lot more closed doors in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
Than there are open doors in other areas right now. So where do you feel like, you know, where do you feel like the cynicism is coming from? Just the complete mass confusion that people are inundated with?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it's been a tough year for everyone. And the kind of experience that I've had in life, and I've been super fortunate, it's hard for me to wrap my head around the amount of hate and,
yeah,
I guess impatience that people have right now, and just the mindsets of people to not be compassionate towards one another and to be supporting one another. So I guess, you know, that's the cynicism, but I think all we can really do is continue to be, you know, a powerful force for, and stand up for what we believe in. And, I think it's important to maintain that. You know, there, it's a balance of optimism and cynicism, I guess, is the best way to put it. You know, sometimes it's like, fuck all this. And sometimes, you know, it's like, all right, here we go. Let's do this.
Absolutely. What gives you hope right now?
I mean, having conversations like this and seeing what people are up to in the world, seeing people, you know, fighting for what they believe in, and seeing the way that our community in food and other communities, in other industries and around the world are coming together and doing everything they can to be positive and,
yeah, push forward
and move and push humanity forward. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's kind of been a really inspiring thing that I didn't know about this podcast, was that a lot of these conversations are, you know, and I talk to people across multiple industries, and a lot of the conversations are really, everyone has a message of perseverance and hope. And it has given me more hope and more positivity rather than the cynicism. And yeah. I'm really grateful for these moments because, you know, it's, I think that there's a lot of people that genuinely are scared right now and they don't know exactly what to be scared of. Like they, you know, of course there's a virus going around, but I think that a lot of people are confused by the very nature of it, considering that there's so many contradictory stories and so many different, you know, news clips that are coming out on the daily. And so there's just so much turmoil in it that, you know, regardless of what you truly believe about this, I think that it's just hard for anybody to stay steadfast in their beliefs because of how much information is out there and everyone's being bombarded with it. There's no escape. If you're on the internet, you're being bombarded with it. These are part of the unraveling. It's part of, you know, these conversations, these moments where you can slow something down and dissect it are part of the unraveling of the crazy insurmountable amount of info that's being shoved into our ears and faces.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like you, for many years of your life, let the food do the talking because your food alone says leaps and bounds about who you are.
Yeah, I think that's been a recurring theme in anything that I've done. And I think the reason I wanted to go to Alinea, because it was like a culmination of all these things that I had done throughout my life. Like, you know, I did, when I was younger, I was into music. When I was super young, there was a magic store right by my house. So I went there all the time and I got into magic, got into like wanting to produce films and music and got into photography and painting. So I think when I settled on cooking, because really I just chose cooking and that was it. It culminated all those things. And I think Alinea was the best vessel for that because it allowed that creativity to like the aspect of magic and music and art and all those things. And now like I'm at a place in my life where I don't know if the next step professionally is going to be cooking. Like
right.
I'm getting back into, you know, film and photography. And right. So I think it's always important to me to have some kind of creative outlet to express myself, more importantly than vocally expressing myself. I think you nailed that.
Thanks. Music has been something that fascinates me as well, you know, and I've been very lucky to be able to work with artists and create dishes that are based off of like their songs and actually talk to them about their creative process and whatnot. I just feel so strongly that there's a few items in life that really transcend all man-made divides, which are food, music, and laughter.
Yeah.
And I think those are,
and I mean, that's
beautiful.
That's
parts
universal.
Of life. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that I really like to get our guests to talk about are some of the ways in which they utilize, either plant medicine or spiritual teachings and practices to enhance their mind, their body, and their spiritual well-being. What are your personal ways in which you kind of use the world around you to enhance your well-being?
I mean, it varies. I do a lot of juicing and make a lot of smoothies. So with, you know, whether it's with ginger and turmeric and maca, whatever, like different ingredients like that. Recently, especially like having more time to do that as a daily ritual at home. I guess more spiritually, I do a lot of meditating. So however that shows up, and it's different. Sometimes, you know, it'll be, you know, what most people think of as meditating, where just sitting, and other times it'll be painting. I've always used kind of painting to like balance myself out because it's something that's so calming and opposite of working in a high stress kitchen.
Absolutely. How do you feel that your body's like reacted with that sort of combination? Like, do you feel lighter? Do you feel less stressed out?
Yeah. I mean, I feel 100 times better when I'm taking the time to focus on those things for myself.
Totally.
And, you know, I've gone through different phases where I'm not doing any of that and I feel terrible. But when I am, just mentally, physically, my mental state is just everything is much better, you know, which goes back to how important it is that we focus on what we're putting in our bodies. And
fucking amen, man. I've always found it very difficult, being that I am, and most of us are, that work in this industry, but just as a person, I'm very task oriented and very like, once I finish this, I have to go do this. And once I finish this, I have to go do this. And, you know, that's a product of our environment as well. But I found it to be extremely difficult to just relax and to actually stop my mind from constantly thinking. And one of the things that led me to peace was to learn how to meditate, because it's meditation. You know, oftentimes people get frustrated with it when they start out and they say, well, it's just not for me, or I just don't understand it, or I don't want it, or I don't like it, or, you know, and it's uncomfortable in the beginning to start meditation, because especially coming from somebody who is like, you know, used to doing 100 things in a day, and that's just what, you know, you have to do, period. There's no other, like, there wasn't even another mode of existence in my mind. And when I realized how to actually slow down, I not only found that I was more productive, but that my mind was free of clutter, which I had never experienced before up until that point. I mean, maybe you've experienced something similar in terms of that clarity, like that mental clarity that happens once you're able to actually meditate and get in a groove. Because I started out, you know, 10 minutes a day, and it was like the longest 10 minutes of the day in the beginning, right? And it was just, come on, you know, just get through it, just get through it. And then after about a month of consistently doing it, I realized that I was dropping into meditation, and then in about 5 minutes or so, and then I felt like it was going by a little bit too quickly. And so I had to increase it to now, you know, 20 minutes. And then that 20 minutes felt like it was just zipping by way too quickly, and it felt so good. So I had to increase to 30. And then by the end of, you know, 6 months, I was at an hour a day. And I swear it was like the most exhilarating moments of my day was to sit down and meditate.
I would even, you know, during family meal, lunch break at Alinea, I would remove myself and go find a quiet place and just take 10 minutes, because in the middle of the day, it was just so important to like recenter myself in that way. And I mean, there have been numerous studies that show like a deep state of meditation can equal hours of sleep for what it does to the body and what it does to the mind. Yeah.
I agree, man.
Completely relate.
It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever actually found in my life, that lead me to true joy, like internal joy, not just like external stimuli making me joyful, but like real, true happiness.
Very powerful what we can do on our own.
God, that's a message for you all. There it is. Anything that we should be on the lookout for from Simon Davies up here? We're going to link Elixir. And is there anything else that we should be on the lookout for from you, sir?
One of the major projects I'm working on right now is a pop-up experience to help create some jobs and tie back into the community here in Chicago. And there will be more coming out on that soon. I'm pretty excited for it.
I love it. I'm super stoked that we got to do this.
Let's talk again soon, anytime.
All right, cheers.
You too.
Hey guys, it's Chris. That wraps up another episode of Earth. On behalf of the Herbal Chef and myself, thank you for joining us. Don't forget to follow us on IG, Twitter, Facebook, all the socials, @the_herbal_chef. and check out the Of Earth story highlights for more info on who we've had on. Please like, subscribe, and rate this so we can continue making this content for you. And by we, I have to mention our producer of the show, Tinashe Works. Thank you, and signing off.